You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Good to be with you and with our listening audience out there.
And we have several listener questions for you to dig through today. The first one, is this current overvaluation in the markets now the biggest bubble ever?
Well, there's some valuations put it up with the dot-com bubble whenever. And I've even seen one where it's the number of shares, S&P 500 units you can buy with this average wage. And Ron Grease at the chart place, he does it, and it's up there. So even using very, very sophisticated means, it is up there. Yeah, indeed.
If this is one of the biggest bubbles ever, why is no one freaked out about it?
Well, because what happens with any sort of stock market cycle, as you get near the top, is when the general public comes in. And it's wonderful. So the general public is coming in. And it's worth noting that the general public, it doesn't get excited about the stock market at bottoms. So it's a crowd phenomenon, and they're coming in. Yeah, and that's just the way it works.
Well, no one freaks out when it's good times. You know, when things are increasing in value and it looks like you're making money.
Oh, yeah, it's all wonderful.
Yeah. Our next question is, does the size of the bubble pre-correction predict the size of the subsequent decline?
Hey, that's a good one. Let's put it this way. We are in the greatest financial bubble in history. The first one was the South Sea Bubble of 1720 in London. And that was the invention of a great bubble, let's call it that. And the amazing thing, Jim, is that on each subsequent example, 1772, 1825, 1873, 1929, and now, is that they have had remarkably similar characteristics. And we are on that now. We're getting what goes with one of these events, and it's very close to ending. And they when they come down, the down is initially steeper than the up. It's a loss of confidence that comes in. When it comes in, it's quite fast. So, up magnificently, and then the first hit can be quite sudden and quite devastating.
What kind of percentage decline do you see for the major indices? Won't the Fed just come in and boost it back up before it gets, quote, really bad?
That's the hope, because, here's the way to look at it. Following 1929, New York fell by something like 87%. Now, in London, their FTSE index fell in half, like a 50%er. So at that time, back in 1929, New York was actually a lesser exchange and much more given to wilder speculation. And now New York is the senior exchange. So a haircut of 50% seems possible once it starts.
Wow.
And it gives up everything that was gained. It goes, takes you back many years. So a very nice rise, great excitement, a break, kind of a few weeks of steady, and then it fails. Now, the other thing about the bubble market is that when the bubble is over, so much of the economy has been involved in the stock speculation, the economy virtually turns down within a month or so of the stock market peak. You can say it's more or less simultaneous. Whereas in a normal bull market cycle, the stock market peaks, and maybe 10, 12 months later, the economy peaks. This is why they call the S&P 500 a leading indicator, because it is, they consider it is, and it's in the index of leading indicators. But that doesn't work when you're end of a bubble. Both up, peak, and the economy follows quite quickly. So, yeah.
Are comparisons to 1929 accurate or just scaremongering for attention because the advances just keep coming for 5 years now without anything but a few short-lived corrections?
I take it it's similar to 1929.
Now, Bob, he was saying, oh, well, again, if there's a correction, it won't be bad because the Fed will bail you out. Bob, how many recessions have there been since the Fed was invented back in the early 1900s?
Oh, yeah. Let's look at the history of the Fed. Around 1900, senior bankers, commercial bankers and all that sort of stuff, financial types, very responsible men, they understood that when you're in a boom and you had a sharp financial crisis, a recession would follow. So then they invented the idea of a, quote, lender of last resort, which would only come in under severe circumstances. And that lender of last resort would prevent the credit crisis, and therefore it would prevent recessions. And they called it the Federal Reserve because in the 1800s, the United States tried a central bank. It was a disaster, and so then they called it the Federal Reserve System, and that was all going to be wonderful. And to sum it all up, there's been 18 cyclical recessions since the Fed was formed that December 1913. Now, in most any discipline, you have a theory, and the theory doesn't work. You only need one failure for the insiders to decide that theory doesn't work. But on the Federal Reserve, we're now out to 18 failures, and yet there's still faith in the Federal Reserve that it can prevent contractions. It is. Oh, there's another one within Fed. The interest rates go up and down, treasury bills. Those are market rates of interest. And we just did a chart recently showing the action in T-bills, yields, and the Fed moves, like Fed funds. And it follows what's going on in T-bills, sometimes by a month or so, sometimes by 4 or 5 months. So the Federal Reserve does not set interest rate policy. It is there looking, trying to look like they're in charge. And then right as you get a crash, now here's the thing. Just before a crash, the belief is the Fed will prevent a crash. We get the crash, and then immediately the Fed says, no, first of all, the Fed said a crash is impossible. You get a crash, and then the Fed says, well, if it, without us, it would have been even worse, or would have continued many months longer. So the lies with central banking are absolutely staggering, and yet it still has a high regard. It's a faith item there.
Now, we had a couple of questions from Willem Gruters in the Netherlands, but it involves some complex research, so we'll get to those questions about the Dow Transport Index and the T-bond market next week after we've had a chance
to dig into. Of course, we all know what the Dow theory is, transports and all, the action between Dow industrials and Dow transports. But my colleague Ross, it's a very sophisticated way of looking at it. So we'll wait until next week to do the answer on that one. And as I say, his study on it, I rely upon. So.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headlines. The first one from Zero Hedge. Futures pushed a new record, NVIDIA above $5 trillion ahead of Fed rate cut and the Magnificent Seven earnings. Will this trend continue, Bob?
No, we've been through this. But let's look at the number on that. One stock has a $5 trillion with a capital T market cap. It's a staggeringly big number.
And my question has, I think I asked it last week, how long can NVIDIA maintain or sustain that $5 trillion valuation? Because I'm taking a look at the 2000 dot-com bust where companies had tremendous capitalization, and within a few weeks or months, it was gone. Some went, many went bankrupt.
Yeah, that's the way it'll go. So we're going into the time when great speculations have become precarious. So I think the break will come. This thing has remarkable legs. I think I think by January we can see the first hit coming in. Sorry to leave it so far open, but this has been an incredible market.
Cutting rates at all-time highs, J.P. Morgan Delta One Desk says, stay bullish.
There's the theme.
Oh,
the Fed is going to cut rates. Stay bullish.
Until the margin clerks call, right?
You're right, yeah.
So, okay, J.P. Morgan says just keep piling into the stock market, but...
Well, anyways, on this business about short rates, I'm going to go over it again, because in a boom with a strong economy, 3-month treasury bills, for example, go up. Interest rates go up in the good times. And then the party is over, and stocks and bonds and real estate and all kinds of things go down the bad times. And what happens with the bad times? The T-bill rate goes down. And in 1929, in June, it was a little over 5%. And the worst in July 1932, it was down to 0.08%, like nothing. And and it didn't turn up until the worst of the washout was over, and the street thought things were getting back to normal. So rising short rates, good. Falling short rates, bad.
Headline, finances are getting tighter as U.S. car repossession surge as more Americans default on their auto loans.
Yeah, yeah. The people who have bought cars on the Never Never are unable to keep the payments up, and that is that. So, yeah.
eBay shares plunge most since 2005 as soft outlook overshadows solid earnings.
Yeah, just another example of I like it. Soft outlook overshadows solid earnings. So it's a good story, but it's suffering liquidation. Well, not liquidation, they had a hit.
Well, so many companies are anticipating bad times with massive layoffs already starting, several banks laying off staff. Amazon says over the next 2 years they're going to let 600,000 people go and replace them with AI.
Yeah, that can happen. Now, in Canada, it the economy has been unusually weak relative to the U.S. for the last decade, with the former Trudeau government just absolutely ruining the Canadian economy. Now, also, through most of that time, a very close advisor to Trudeau was Mark Carney, who is now Prime Minister. And Mark Carney has been a governor of the Bank of England, so he's definitely a central banker. But within Carney, he is a green communist. And with Trudeau, it showed up like there was a couple of high-end people from Germany came some years ago to meet with Trudeau because they wanted to get going on liquid natural gas. And Trudeau said, no, we can't because it increases CO2. And then now, very belated, the Canadian government is getting on to developing liquid natural gas. And it's just idiotic that you have this belief system at the highest level of government that CO2 is evil. I mean, it's utter nonsense.
Bob, do you think it would be a good idea to build a pipeline to Hudson's Bay, Churchill, even though it might be iced in for two or 3 months? You still have Europe screaming for LNG products so they don't have to rely on Russia anymore.
Yeah. Well, but as I say, you know, the Hudson Bay freezes up. It would be good to get at least one pipeline going. But you have a remarkable irony in Canada where they have this program of equalization payments where every province gets the monies to provide government services, and guess how that works? Alberta pays $13 billion a year into equalization, and most of it goes into Quebec, because, as you know, Quebec is very special. And And for years now, they've been wanting to build a pipeline extending to eastern Canada and right out to the eastern seaboard. Then you could stop tankers sailing up the pristine St. Lawrence River. No. And guess who says no? Quebec. So they get $13 billion annually out of the oil and gas business in Alberta, but they won't allow export or expansion of a pipeline with oil for the East Coast. So there you have it. Absolutely idiotic.
Now, I see there is some talk right now of a pipeline to Ontario where the oil could be processed. Then you can put it on ships and ship it down the St. Lawrence because waterways are a federal jurisdiction. Quebec doesn't have any say.
Yeah, but you understand it. Underneath the, all, Prime Minister Mark Carney doesn't want to have any pipelines built at all. And there are certain bills that are existing. And he will make noises that there should be pipelines, but it won't happen. And then you also have the same idiotic twist with the premier of, of the province of British Columbia. And I saw him on TV recently, and what a twittering idiot. And he doesn't want an oil pipeline going across the province of Alberta, and he doesn't want to have oil tankers on the coast. And there you are. It just adamantly, but the way it explains it is just utter gobbledygook, double talk.
Now, PC supports the federal ban on tankers off the coast. There hasn't been a major oil tanker incident since they tightened up the rules and made all the tankers double-hulled. So are we, like, screaming
one,
the sky is falling when we've got supports to keep the sky up?
Well, what was the name of the bad accident on the coast?
Exxon Valdez.
Yes, okay.
In Prince William
Later
Sound.
On, it came out that the captain was incapacitated by booze. Mm. He was drunk. Mm. And the proper helmsmanship wasn't being practiced, and they just sailed, steamed right on into some rocks. Now, there hasn't been any serious collisions like that since. So it was a one-off due to a captain error.
Well, I just looked up the recent history of major marine oil spills, and since they double-hulled the tankers, they haven't had any super serious spills since then. So it's a lot safer. So again,
oh,
we're
yeah.
looking at
Even
the 1970s.
Even if you do have a collision with something,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, but the ships just don't leak like they used to because of the double hull.
But now, here's, let's take this one another step. They're hauling crude oil in tanker cars on railroads, which are subject to accidents, in which case you got a tanker car of crude oil at the surface. Oh, no. A well-constructed pipeline is a very good, is practical.
Yeah, you'd think the people of Quebec would remember Lac Manignique. I can't say Manignique.
Oh, yeah.
Where the oil tankers ran out of control and the rail cars exploded and killed
yeah.
dozens of people.
Yeah, the rolling train of oil cars just
didn't
got
set
away
the
and rolled yeah. quietly in the night and then crashed in the small community. Absolute disaster.
Now, it's been over a year since I've had coffee, Bob. I've switched to tea. And am I ever glad, because our last headline here is from Zero Hedge. The world is running out of coffee. Arabica futures hit new highs as Brazil troubles worsen.
Yeah, well, I'm for decades a fan of Frank Sinatra. Hmm. And there is a wonderful video clip out there where he is at a very large outdoor stadium in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, and he is doing the coffee song, which is, there's an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. It, for me, it just works because he's in this, in Brazil, singing the coffee song. I love it. It's a great, great video.
Bob, thank you so much for being on the show. What are you dressing up for Halloween as?
Well, actually, I've got my very loud colored check pants, pull-on pants here today. They're red and black checks. So I am set. But the problem in Vancouver is I think at the Halloween hour, it could be a deluge of rain. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could go as a salmon.
Yeah.
Or a sturgeon.
But, you know, I'm looking forward to it because when I put my next order in for groceries, Save On Foods, I get them delivered up right onto my counter in the kitchen. It's a wonderful service. So I think I'm going to get candies and chocolates at a hell of a discount once Halloween's actually over. Do you think that is possible, that you're going to get Halloween candies at a discount?
I always buy Valentine's chocolates the day after Valentine's.
Right.
Yes, because the women I know, they don't care if they get it a day later and a whole lot cheaper. That means they get more.
Sure. And I noticed that my fridge is totally out of the little arrow, the tiny little packets with two arrow bars in it. And I'm right out of Kit Kat bars as well. So hopefully next week I can get them at a very good price.
Well, I will be wearing my Blue Jays sweatshirt from 1993 with two-peat on it, cheering them on, hoping they win the World Series.
Yeah.
Bob?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually not going out to see the boys, my grandsons, on this one. I'm just going to stay at home real comfortable.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.